This is the Motion Church Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like more information about Motion Church, you can always visit our website at motionchurch.com. If you'd like to contribute to what God is doing here at Motion, you can do that at motionchurch.com/give. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
All right, what's up, everybody? Hey, you guys are excited. You're a lively bunch this morning. So we're so thankful you guys are here, especially holiday weekends are always kind of iffy in church. People travel and stuff. So we're so glad you guys prioritize church. We think this is the best hour of your week. It's the best hour of my week. It's the best hour of our week, right? So that's what we do. We come to church. And again, we just view church as obviously all of the cliche things, community and family and all of those sorts of things. But it's also an investment in your life, your family's life, your future. And so we think it's really important. And we're so glad you guys are here investing in your spiritual well-being. So we've been in a series called Dreams, and we've had a lot of fun with this. Will y'all stop vaping in church? I'm about sick of it. Just about sick of it. We've had a lot of fun with this because, again, I think this is something, what happens is, you've seen the studies on this, what happens with kids, for example, in the 5 to 6 to 7 year old age range are generally, is that off or is it still coming? That is insane. Okay. Somebody suck it all up. It's water-based. It's gotta be good. So 5 to 7 years old, and really probably even a broader age range than that, kids are off the charts in terms of creativity and their ability to think outside of the box. And as you get older, what happens is, the way that we would describe that is that we tend to lose our ability to dream, to believe that there's something more for us. And here's what I believe as followers of Jesus, God has you on this earth for a reason, for a purpose. You are uniquely crafted and created to do something that only you can do. The way that I've always thought about this is, you are the only you, and only you can do what you can do. So you better do what God has called you to do. I'm gonna say it one more time for those of you sitting in the back, in back row Baptists, right? You are the only you, and only you can do what you can do. So you better do what God has called you to do. You get one crack at this thing called life, and you are called to be a good steward of it. And I believe that God is the one who puts dreams, desires, goals, and ambitions in our hearts. And it is our responsibility. I firmly believe that we will stand before God one day and have to answer to him why we did what we did or why we didn't do what we didn't do. And that's awesome. That's an incredible responsibility, but it's also terrifying if you're sitting on the sidelines. So do not sit on the sidelines. Get in the game. That's what the series has been about. So we've been looking at what we call the components of a dream. And essentially the way that I visualize this is everybody's trying to get to the top, right? Everybody's trying to get to, let's call it the rooftop instead of the mountaintop. That's overplayed. So let's call it the rooftop so we can kind of be on top. And so the components of the dream are these structures that support us being on the roof. And we've talked about how calling is essential. If God hasn't called you to it, if it's just a good idea, if it's something that only benefits you, you're going to quit when it gets hard. So that's usually a pretty good way to kind of weed out the things that are not dreams. God dreams is what we've been calling them. And then the second week, we talked about how character is absolutely essential. Your talent may take you somewhere, but it's your character that sustains you once you get there. And then the following week, we talked about position. But really, position is not as important as purpose and as passion is. So we talked about kind of all of that. And then last week, we talked about some obstacles to our dreams coming to pass, coming to fruition. And so that's great. These are awesome components. But let's talk about something that's just a little bit different. This is the fifth component. And really, this is less of a structure and how you're supposed to act when you get there. Okay, cool. Good morning. Let's try that again. So here's what I think. I think so often, y'all remember when you were a kid and you would go to the restaurant, which we didn't get to go to the restaurant a lot, because we didn't grow up with a lot of money. I told you guys, I ate mac and cheese about 12 times a week. Breakfast, lunch, and sometimes dinner, right? So we just, didn't get to go out a lot. So when we went out, sometimes we didn't know how to act when we went out. And mama's I can't take you nowhere. You guys ever say that to your kids? You just don't know how to act when I take you out. And so what I hope for us, what I want for us to know kind of with respect to this dreams is how to act when we get there, right? How do you respond to some success, some accomplishment, some achievement in your life, which in this case, in our case, for this is a really big thing, right? It's a milestone. So we need to know how to act. once we get there. I'll explain all that in a little bit. Let's start with kind of our primary verse that we've been looking at. Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 through 11. It says this: Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. Just the sibling thing is so fun to me, right? He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this matter in mind. So Joseph had this dream when he was, scholars believe he was about 17 years old when this took place. So Joseph, as a very young person, has this dream from God that he's going to be put in a position of authority over his brothers and even his parents. Now, I don't think Joseph ever, he never, because I know a lot of people, they long for power for all of the wrong reasons, right? They want to use it to wield it over people. I don't get that with Joseph. I think that Joseph, he didn't ask for this, but God entrusted him to be in a position of power because he knew that he would handle that power well. And so I think that's what you find with Joseph. And so he had this dream that he would be put in a position where his parents and his brothers would be in submission to him. And we spent a lot of time covering how Joseph, you know, kind of gets to this point. So we talked about how he was thrown into the pit by his own brothers, and then ultimately he was sold into slavery by his own brothers, and then he was incarcerated for a crime that he did not commit for several years, which is just, you know, it's mind-blowing. And then to boot, kind of just to add a cherry on top of all of it, like at the last minute, he thought he's about to get out because the cupbearer, as we talked about last week, he's like, he interpreted his dream, and the cupbearer gets promoted to his position back in the palace. And so he's like, "Hey, when you make it, don't forget about me. Let me tell you something. They always forget about you. Let me help you out, right? Let me just go ahead and set you free from that thought that anybody else is going to remember you when they get back," until 2 years later. So 2 years later, the cupbearer, he remembered. He's like, "Oh yeah, I forgot, you know, that guy that got me out of prison. Let me see what I can do. Let me give him a call," right? So he picked up his cell phone, his Egyptian wireless cell phone, and he gave him a call. So this is kind of where we're at. We've covered all of that, but today we're going to talk about when Joseph gets to the palace, how he responds to being in this position of prominence. So he got promoted to the palace to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And so let's look at that story really quick. Genesis chapter 41, verses 14 through 16. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon, which, you know, the prison, right? When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it." Now, isn't it interesting that, like, what started with the dream, it kind of intersects with another dream, which ultimately leads to the fulfillment of your dream? Because if you help other people accomplish their dreams, God will help you accomplish, okay. Okay, so when he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And I love Joseph's response: "I cannot do it." He said, nope, to Pharaoh, the most powerful person in the world. Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." So what I love about this is you find in Joseph a person who understands his abilities, which are limited, right? He understands that he is not the one calling the shots. He's not the one that's in control, that he is the created, not the creator, that he is the clay and not the potter. And he's like, "Hey, Pharaoh, let me tell you something, homie. I can't do nothing for you, but I know someone who can." And I think that is a great place to see, to have your mentality, right? So that's the first part of the story. So Pharaoh's like, okay. And so what he does is he proceeds to tell Joseph his dreams. Now, Pharaoh, I don't know what he had to eat or drink before he went to bed, but he had some crazy dreams. We told you guys, we kicked off the series talking about how Shelley had a dream about Johnny Depp and Justin Bieber giving money to the church. And so I'm like, should I be concerned? I mean, okay. Just, should I be concerned? Like, let's take a poll. No, I'm just kidding. So Pharaoh tells Joseph his dreams. And his dreams, just kind of in a nutshell, the first one is he sees these seven fat cows, and they're just, like, you know, hanging out, being fat cows. That's what fat cows do. And then all of a sudden, seven skinny, gaunt, ugly cows come and eat the large seven fat cows, but they don't even look like they've eaten. They're still frail and gaunt. And so Pharaoh's like, okay, that's weird, right? And then he has another dream where you have this stalk of grain, and it's got seven full heads on it, and then seven like kind of puny, minuscule heads come, and they devour the other seven heads of grain. And so Pharaoh's just really confused at this point. So this is where we pick up Joseph kind of interpreting the dream to Pharaoh. It is just as I said to Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance of Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered, because the famine that follows it will be so severe. So that's why the fat calf was being eaten by the skinny calf, and nobody could even tell that the fat calf had been eaten by the skinny calf. Tracking? The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has also been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And then you fast forward a little bit. Here's what is so cool about Joseph. Joseph doesn't just give him an answer. He doesn't just kind of talk about the problems, but he also presents some solutions. He goes on to say, hey, Pharaoh, this is what's happening. You've got 7 years of prosperity and then 7 years of famine. And so what you need to do is you need to find some really smart people, and you need to start storing up now for 7 years so that you're prepared for the 7 years of lean, right? 7 years of famine. And so Pharaoh's like, you seem pretty smart. So this is what he says in 41 and 43, or through 43. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger. The ring was what he would use to transfer his authority. So anytime, for example, he would send off a document, they would use their signet ring, they would use wax, and they stamp it, right? You've seen it in the movies. And so then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, Mike Way! Just felt like that had to be done in redneckese. Thus, he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. So this boy had gone from the pit to slavery to prison to the palace. Like, this is it, right? This is the fulfillment of the dream that he had when he was a young man, that now he is the second most powerful person in the entire world. Surely his brothers would have to bow down to him now. And what's so cool is you just don't see that attitude from Joseph. Because it's some things about dreams change, but the thing that inspires us to dream in the first place doesn't change. And I'll make sense of all of that in a minute. So after 13 years of detours and delays, Joseph finally saw the dream come to pass. And this is where I want to spend some time today, is how do we respond when you start to see the fulfillment of the dream? Because some people respond all wrong. Some people start to think a little too highly of themselves when they start to see the fulfillment of the dream, as if it wasn't God who put it in their hearts in the first place, as if it wasn't God who gave them the ability to accomplish anything that they've accomplished up to this point. Y'all gonna get me started. So the first point today, that was a really long introduction, but the points are short. Cool? Everybody good with that? I promise we're gonna get out here at a reasonable time, because I heard some of y'all got some barbecue, but I ain't got no invites. Weird. So first point is this. It's called working the dream. Working the dream. The coming to life of a dream is really just the beginning of the work required to sustain the dream. The coming to life of a dream is really just the beginning of the work required to sustain the dream. Y'all know we use this expression a lot in our, I say this all the time, like kind of tongue-in-cheek. I'm tongue-in-cheek. Right? Living. Somebody asked me how I'm doing. Like, and how do you answer that question? I mean, like, do you really want to know? I don't think you do. But y'all didn't want to talk about all that stuff, cause y'all know, like, people you don't even know are like, how you doing? I'm like, do you care? I'm fine, right? So generally, one of my kind of default stock responses is I'm living the dream, because nightmares are dreams also. Never forget that. So I am living the dream. And so when somebody says that they are living the dream, what they should really be saying is, or what they should say instead, is that I am working the dream. Because when the dream comes to fruition, it comes to pass. That's, you know what your reward for seeing the dream come to pass is? Work. Work is the reward for seeing the dream come to pass. Like you look at Joseph's situation, when the dream came to pass, you know what he was entrusted with? You know what his reward for the dream coming to pass was? 14 more years of labor and leadership. So for 7 years, it's all good, and I need you to accumulate and to store up. And then for 7 more years, I need you to be a manager and a distributor. And essentially, you are responsible for saving thousands upon thousands upon thousands of lives. So your reward for all of your work up until this point where you thought the dream was coming to fulfillment is more work. So we're not just living the dream. We are working the dream. It says this in 41, chapter 41, verses 56 and 57. When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere, which is a really interesting part of this story, right? Because if it was only in Egypt, then the rest of the dream would not have come to pass, which we'll look at in a little bit. So the same thing is true for us, just like it was for Joseph, that we don't just live the dream, we work the dream. The reward for the dream coming to pass is actually more work so that the dream can be sustained. Let me give you an example. Some people, like especially I think when you're younger and you think about kind of your life, and what do we do so often? And for whatever reason, maybe this is unfair, maybe this is a stereotype, and stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason, just throwing that out there. But most 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old girls think about the day, they long for the day that they get married, right? Princess, fairy tale wedding, and I'm like, yo, daddy got to pay for that. Just want to remind you, Shelly and I were having this conversation the other day, and like she threw out a number, and I'm like, I was thinking like half of that would be suffice. So anyway, this is my life. Good morning. So they long for the day that they get married. Now, here's the thing. Marriage, that day is such an incredibly special day. That's just the beginning of the work. The goal is not just to get married. The goal is to have a good marriage. And so the fulfillment of the dream, you are just stepping into more work. And it's good work. It's meaningful work. It's work that matters, but it is more work, right? You are inviting more work when you start to see the dream come to pass. The dream, the fulfillment of the dream is not just having kids. Anybody can do that. The fulfillment of the dream is raising kids who aren't terrorists or mostly not terrorists, right? The fulfillment of the dream is to raise godly, productive citizens, right? People who contribute to the well-being of society, who have the ability to think and reason and ration and can use their own brain and aren't just knuckleheads. That's my best Barkley impersonation, right? So we are working the dream. We don't just live the dream. We work the dream. What about, because I love entrepreneurs. I love like starters and doers. And so starting a business is not the goal. Like I know people who have started hundreds of businesses and they ain't doing none of them, right? I have 12 good ideas before breakfast generally. Like, and I've started a lot of businesses in my life and most of them didn't work. I'm just being straight up honest with you, right? So starting a business is not the goal. That's not the fulfillment of the dream. Building it so that it is successful, sustainable, and transferable is the fulfillment of the dream, because there is no success without a successor. If it's not something that you can transfer and pass on, then is it really successful, right? So you working the dream is way more important than living the dream. That's our first point. Good morning. All right, you guys are getting, I like it. Y'all got a weed eater and you just got to prime the bulb a little bit. Some of y'all don't know what I'm talking about. You need a weed eater. That is, you know what a weed eater is? It is the combatant to the Sissification of the United States of America. That's how you get tough. Go weed eat, right? Second point. And some of these are so cliche, but we're going to look at them from some different perspectives, in my opinion. Second point is this. Stay hungry. Stay hungry. And it's so cliche, right? Isn't that, don't you hear that all the time? Especially like, again, most of my analogies and my understandings and illustrations and my beliefs about how the world works comes from sports. Just, I'm very shallow in that regard. I will be honest with you. So, you know, they say that one of the hardest things in sports is not to win a championship, but it's to win another championship. And what happens is, you guys, right? So kind of to repeat the success is harder than to achieve the success in the first place. And the idea here is once you've attained a level of success, you don't want to put in the amount of effort that it took to, you know, attain that level of success again, to sustain that success. And so kind of when it comes to our work and this dream, then we have to stay hungry to avoid that. But that's not really what we're going to, that's not the angle that we're talking about. That one's obvious, right? And again, kind of working the dream covers that as well. I think it's even more important here for us to remember, stay hungry, like maintain your level of enthusiasm and passion and all of that stuff. Sure. But more important than that is stay hungry, stay desperate for God, even when you start to see some things change in your life for good, right? Y'all know how this works. Like when we have bad things happen in our life, the first thing we do is we cry out to God, dear God, where are you at? Get me out of, if you will just get me out of this situation that I created for myself and I brought it all upon myself, but if you and all of your goodness and loving kindness will get me up out of this situation, I will serve you all the surely goodness and mercy and I will follow you all the days of my life. That's what you start using scripture against God, for God, to God. And so what's sad is like in bad times, we understand that we should turn to God, but in good times, we forget that he's the one that helped us get to the point where we have the good times in the first place. And so it's really important that when things are going good, that you stay hungry, that you maintain this level of desperation. Y'all know how quickly we distance ourselves from how things were when they were hard, when things are good? Does that make sense? We forget when things are going well, we forget about the sleepless nights. When things are going well, we forget about the restlessness in our soul. When things are going well, we forget about the times that we were crying out to God in desperation for clarification and direction and understanding. We forget about those tear-filled prayers, like just, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it, but I know you've called me to it, and I know you're going to see me through it. And right? Like your prayer is so deep, it doesn't have words. Yeah, if you ain't had none of those, then you ain't living. You live in a dream, you ain't working a dream, right? Anybody else? Okay, so I think what is important here is that we maintain our level of desperation. What can happen here in these situations is when you, let's just say you start to see some fulfillment of the dream, you start to see what we would call success. When this happens, you can start to buy into some lies about the fulfillment of the dream. And the first one, the most obvious one is like, well, look what I did. No? Man, y'all don't be sensitive this morning. Like, we ain't got time for none of that. It's summertime, there ain't no snowflakes, right? Don't be sensitive. So I don't know anybody that is immune to this. One of the things that can happen is if you're not careful is you can start to believe that maybe you start to overestimate your abilities. You start to overestimate what you contributed to the accomplishment of the dream. And we so quickly forget that God is just in his infinite mercy. He's just inviting us to be a part of what he's doing. This is very little about you and me and very much about him. For of him and through him and to him are all things. To him belong the glory, right? It's not for of you and through you and to you. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about him. And he is just allowing us in his grace to be a part of. You didn't do anything. You did. You showed up. You wrote your name on the test and he gave you an A, right? Like, and even if, let's just say you're the smartest person in the room, congratulations, right? Let's say you're the smartest person in the room, you still are limited. You are still finite. You still don't have all of the answers. And even if you did, who's the one that gave them to you? Who is the one that created you? Who's the one that crafted you? Like, so ultimately, we've just got to remember that this is all about him and it's very little about us. And that helps us to maintain this proper position in terms of desperation. I don't care how successful you are. I don't care how well off you are or how many achievements you've got in your life. You need Jesus in the baddest way. And sometimes you need him more when you think more of yourself. All right, okay, I'm going to move quickly because I can tell the level of sensitivity. It's like we're at a 6. We're going to try to keep it at like a 4, right? If we're brutally honest, like, you know you, and you just need to be thankful to God that he's allowed you to be a part of what he's doing in your life. The danger here, this is the danger of having this mentality, is that you can, it's a mindset. The danger is the mindset. Once you get to this place where you think that you've accomplished some things on your own and you've kind of, you know, pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps, the danger is it's not just that we lose the passion for the purpose we're called to, but we can lose passion for the one who gave us our purpose. It's not just that we can lose our passion for the purpose that we're called to, but we can lose our purpose, our passion for the one who gave us our purpose. Do you see what happened? This is, I see, man, I've seen it. You've seen it. We know what happens. Like, things start going well. And in the first, this is what people do. Let me just kind of, I've been in church for 20 plus, none of your business years. Been in church for a minute. So I've seen so many times where people, man, they run to church, right? Because things in their life are chaotic. And most of the time we treat church like triage, right? People come in with emergency wound care, right? They need help in the baddest way. And so what happens is they come in, church people embrace them, they love them, they walk with them, they get them healthy, and they just leave, right? They're like, oh, I'm good. Like, I did what I needed to do. The church served its purpose, and then now I'm no longer. And then you find out later that they're actually worse than they were before they came in the first place. Is that too sensitive too? Man, I feel like a certain type of way, right? Because, you know, that's what we say when we don't know what to say. I feel like a certain type of way. Well, just tell me exactly what that type of way is and we'll talk about it. I just feel a certain type of way. And so the danger here is we can disconnect from our passion for the one who gave us our purpose in the first place. There's a story in Joseph's life, kind of fast forwarding a little bit, that even though you find him with, again, what we would consider success, we would consider, you know, some fulfillment of the dream, his mentality is still right. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 42, verses 16 through 18. It says, send one of your number. Now, quick context. So he's met his brothers. His brothers came to Egypt because the famine was so severe where they were at as well. So they needed grain. So they come to Egypt, and Joseph finds out about it, calls for him. And I'm just being honest. I would be so petty in this moment. Like, I would be like, hey, y'all remember that dream that I had? And you didn't believe me? Look at me now, right? Look at me now. So this is what Joseph does. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. Then, and he put them all in custody for 3 days. So he threw them in jail for 3 days. I mean, so he got a little bit of vindication, right? On the third day, Joseph said to them, again, second most powerful man in the world, the fulfillment of the dream had taken place. At this point, Joseph could have had a higher estimation of himself than he probably should have. And it says that, this is what it says, do this and you will live, for I fear God. I fear God, right? So you start to see this reliance on, he stayed hungry for God, even though there was some success in his life. He just remembered, he maintained his priorities. He didn't forget what this whole thing was about. So he stayed hungry. Next point, last point. Y'all good with this? One more time? Do it one more time. Is to stay humble. Stay humble. Again, isn't this cliche? Like, these are, but here's what I know about things that are cliche. Things that are cliche for a reason. What we feel so often shouldn't have to be said, needs to be said, because we tend to forget things that have been said. So let's talk about when you've experienced a little bit of this success that you need to stay humble. And again, I hate even talking about this because, you know, unfortunately, these are things that bear repeating. So when you experience just, you know, some semblance of success, you start to achieve and accomplish in your life, don't let it go to your head, right? Like, again, you know you. And you know what I know about you that I know about me? Like, you're kind of a pain in the butt sometimes, right? Just like I am. And we know ourselves. And so just remember that when you start to achieve and accomplish or see the fulfillment in your dream, is that you have to, you just stay humble, stay with the right approach, stay with the right mentality. The thing that doesn't change, this is what's so cool about this. So from the time that the dream begins, right, the time that you feel like this is what God has called you to do in your life, we talked about this earlier in the series, it's never about what you do, but it's about who you do it with and who you do it for, right? What you do is not nearly as important as who you do it with and who you do it for. And that does not change from the time that you begin this journey of seeing the dream fulfilled and the time that you're stepping into the fulfillment of that dream. It's always about people. It's always about other people, right? And so it's easy in these moments to kind of forget that it's about other people because you start to think it's a little bit more about yourself than it actually is. And so that's why we have to remind ourselves to stay humble, right? Stay, or if you're really initiated, it's humble. Stay humble. Yeah, I know people that say it like that. I'm like, stop trying so hard. Yeah, I don't know anybody like that. That's cool. So it's like we said before, what you do isn't as important as who you do it with and who you do it for. Honor people, like honor them. Like even if you were put in a position of authority over their lives, over them, honor them. We use this expression a lot that's been helpful for me. It's to honor up, honor down, honor all the way around. And it's really cool when you do it with a dance because you get honor, right? And you're going to do that. Watch, you'll do it later. At some point this week, you'll be like, okay, honor people, honor people. Honor people, even if you're in a position of authority over them. Honor them, even if you're further along in your journey than they are. Honor them, even if you're above them. Honor them if you're beneath them. Honor them if you're contemporaries, if you're all the way around them. It doesn't matter. Just honor them. And look, I get it. I understand. People can be so frustrating. So are you, right? Like, I understand how frustrating people are because I know how frustrating I am. Like, I y'all don't understand. Like, June 16th every year is a memorial to the level of patience that one person can have for another frustrating person. That is mine and Shelly's anniversary. And so every year I'm just like, girl, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it, right? You're frustrated. We're all frustrating, but we still should honor each other through our differences. You know what? This is really important because we tend to get frustrated with people who don't understand us. We tend to get frustrated with people, let's say in your pursuit of your dream, even in the fulfillment and the accomplishment of your dream, you're working the dream. They're not going to understand you. They're not going to understand your drive. They're not going to understand your ambition. They're not going to understand your level of responsibility. They're not going to understand the weight that you carry. That's okay. Like you don't know what you don't know, and you can't understand it unless you're walking in it. That's okay. I still love you. I'm still going to honor you, even though you're a knucklehead. That's two times in one day. Love them anyways. Genesis chapter 43, verses 28 through 30, it says this. So kind of this whole story started to play out. Joseph, smart. Joseph, very intelligent. He wants to see his father and his other brother who didn't come the first time. His other brother is Benjamin. So he sends one of them back to tell him that, hey, Benjamin needs to come because I think you guys are spies. I think you're lying, although he knew that they were telling the truth. So ultimately, after, you know, one goes back, gets Benjamin, they talk the father into it. This is the interaction that he has with his brother, Benjamin. They replied, "Your servant, our father, is still alive and well," and they bowed down, prostrating themselves before him. Now, right here, this would be my moment, right? Like his brothers, do you guys know what prostrate? It's like when you're all the way on the ground, face to the ground. Like you cannot get any lower than prostrate. And all of his brothers are prostrate on the ground before Joseph. And I'm just telling you, petty me would be like, my sheaves of grain were standing upright. And I saw your sheaves of grain bowing down before mine. And what's so funny is like they were speaking a different language at this point, and all of a sudden, I would have bust out the native tongue and let them know all about it. But Joseph, he's a better man than I am. Okay, sorry. That was for what that's worth. As he looked about and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's own son, he asked, "Is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about?" And he said to Benjamin, "God be gracious to you, my son." Now here's where it gets really, really interesting. Again, Joseph, second most powerful man in the entire world, has every right and opportunity to lord this moment and situation over his brothers, but this is what it says that he did. And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and look for a place to weep. He went into his private room and he wept there. Joseph didn't forget. Joseph didn't forget that the dream is always people. Right? It's always about people. It's always about helping other people, encouraging other people, building other people up. Whatever you see, you know, come to fruition in your life should ultimately be to the benefit and blessing of other people around you. So Joseph realized in this moment that God had raised him up to a position of authority for his brothers and his father and his mother to be in submission to him, not for himself, but for their sake. Right? He was elevated so that they could live. He was elevated so that they would be saved. He was elevated so that there would be benefit and blessing in their life. And the same thing is true for us. Everything when it comes to our dream, our God dream, whatever it is that God has called you to do, this passion that he's put on your heart that you can't get away from, it's always got to be about other people. And that's how you stay humble, right? That's what keeps us going. That's what keeps the ambition high, is that people need people. People need you. There is somebody, and this feels like such a sales technique, right? Like, oh, somebody needs you. But somebody needs you, right? It's only true because it's true, right? That there is somebody that only you can reach. There is somebody that only you can help. There is somebody that only you can touch. Like, I have my limitations. Most people, what I've discovered in, again, you know, being 20 years in the church, most people just lie to the pastor, right? That's just the way that it is. Like, oh, pastor, everything's good, right? Oh, pastor, marriage is great. Oh, pastor, ain't got no struggles. Oh, pastor, ain't everything in my life is peachy keen, right? And then you find out like their life is in shambles, right? But they they'll be honest with you. Maybe there's somebody that you can help that I could never even have the opportunity to help. Maybe that's part of your dream, is to help other people. Obviously it is, right? You understand what I'm saying? But people are always the focus of our dreams, and that keeps us humble. Should. Stay hungry, stay humble, work the dream. Stay hungry, stay humble, and work the dream. Amen? This is how you act when you get there, when you arrive, which none of us ever arrive this side of heaven. Amen. Let me pray for us. Jesus, you are so good. You are so incredibly good. We're so thankful for everything that you've done for us. God, as we celebrate this day, God, it's a holiday where we memorialize those who've sacrificed for our freedoms. God, I cannot think of a more clear picture of what that looks like when I think about you. And I think about the cross, and I think about he who knew no sin became sin on our behalf so that we might become the righteousness of God. God, help us to memorialize that today and every day. God, as it relates to our dreams, we're so thankful that you trust us enough, that you are kind enough and gracious enough to us to allow us to be part of this story that you're writing, this journey that you've invited us on. Thank you for giving us dreams. God, I pray that if we start to see the accomplishment of those dreams, that we keep our heads right. God, that we stay hungry, that we stay humble, and that we understand that work is the reward for the dream. God, help us to love you so well that we see the dream not just beginning and not just fulfilling, but sustained and ultimately passed on. Jesus, we love you, we need you, and we're so thankful for you. It's in your incredible name we pray, and everybody say, amen.